as we turn toward the political conventions, as the campaign for president builds up, as Democrats and Republicans grab for the tomahawks, hating each other, there's one man we want to sit down and talk to. He offers wisdom and clarity. His name is Charles Lipson, Professor Emeritus at the University of Chicago, the Ritzma Chair, prolific writer, writer of books, writer of articles. And just go to, write this down so you can go to it whenever you want, charleslipson.com. Charles Lipson is joining Jeff Carlin from WGN Radio, executive producer there, and me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of johncassnews.com. And where are you as the country grabs for the tomahawks, as the parties begin to clash, as each side says they're virtuous and the other side is evil? You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Joining us now is our friend, as promised, Charles Lipson, Professor Emeritus, the Ritzma Chair at the University of Chicago. Charles, welcome to the Chicago Way again. Welcome back home, buddy.
It's great to talk to you, John, and you, Jeffrey.
Great to have you, Charles. Good to have you, Charles. I know, John, you usually kick things off, but I got to commend you. Two great columns I've read over the past, I guess, week or so now, or not even. We'll get into some of the Super Tuesday looking forward, but the headline from your piece I saw on the Telegraph about mm-hmm. the Supreme Court has dealt the first blow against Democratic lawfare. And I just love that. Like, that's exactly what we're seeing, right? I mean, Charles, take us to where that came from for you.
Well, it's not an original term with me, but I think that it's a really disturbing element of what's going on now. Personally, I think that some of the cases against Trump, it might make sense to bring them. What doesn't make sense is to bring them in the midst of an election year. The U.S. Justice Department has an internal rule that it doesn't bring investigative measures, that is the word that they use, within 60 days of an election. I think that's too short a time. I think it should be longer. But the main point is they don't want to get into an election interference situation like you had with James Comey, who I thought did damage to Hillary Clinton. Couldn't happen to a nicer person. But I mean, it's not up to the FBI to do that kind of damage. Either bring a legal case or don't.
Or not. Right.
And don't do it right near the election, because there's really no time for the defendant to get back at it. And I think what you also see in Georgia, and you see it with Alvin Bragg in New York, is just people who got elected on the theme, I'm going to get this guy. And yeah. Then that's what they're doing. And in America, first of all, we have general rules that prosecutors are supposed to be disinterested. They should want to win convictions, but they shouldn't want to win them at the expense of fairness. And that's exactly what you have. I mean, in the case, for example, where Trump is going to have to put up something like half a $1 billion. In that case, that has never been brought against anyone else in New York, and yet it's standard practice to overvalue your real estate assets. So what they're doing there is really malicious prosecution.
But Fannie Willis and Letitia James and all of them are the thing that bothers people, I think, is that they've campaigned.
Yeah.
We're going to get Trump, as you said. And then what's odd is that
what could be wrong with that?
At the same time, we're inundated. The Americans are inundated with wave after wave of screaming and caterwauling about authoritarian action by the federal government. And Trump gets in and the dictators and right. Look around you. Look around you. What's going on with that, with the law?
Well, they're prosecuting the people they want to prosecute and not the people they don't. And you're beginning to see pushback. In San Francisco, one of the epicenters of this kind of progressivism, where business after business is leaving the city, voters just changed, voted to bring much more intensive
penalties.
Right? They threw out Chesia Boardin earlier, but now they seem to be going one step further.
Yeah, and, like carrying drugs might be a crime again in San Francisco.
And that was also happened in Oregon. They decriminalized hard drugs. And what they found, I mean, this is what years ago Louis Brandeis called the laboratories of democracy, the states as a laboratory. If that had worked, it worked, but it didn't work. And so states shouldn't try that again. And what they've said now is you can't just get a parking ticket for that if you are not willing to go into treatment.
Right. And they've also tied welfare to drug screening and actually boosted their spending on police, which, you know, we never would have thought a ultra progressive city like that would do. It's almost like they're the canary in the coal mine for this stuff, because we were talking about Chester.
Bingo.
Go ahead. You know, look at what's going to happen. Look what's going to happen. Now we're seeing it here in Chicago with the, the Cook County State Attorney's race that seems to be, all hope is that it's people are fed up with it and they want these quasi conservative Democrat to come in and fix things. And I hope we get to that point. We'll see.
I do too. I've got to say, I'm calling these the thank you, sir. May I have another election? what more evidence do you need that this stuff doesn't work?
Right.
You know, it'll be a bad day when George Soros loses all his prosecutors. But I wonder what the left wing journalists will do when they're all gone. Will they
really
have someone else?
Well, another city that's making progress on this is Houston.
Yes.
Again, you couldn't elect a Republican in Houston, but they did elect the toughest Democrat. And that will be an issue for Chicago. But it's also, as you guys well know, it's also an advantage of the American decentralized states system, where, New York can do what it wants, and then the businesses all move to Florida.
Right.
It's called federalism, right?
I heard that.
It's this ancient document that was written many years ago. Yeah.
I knew you should have seen Hamilton.
ancient. I had a Ute this week talk about her friend who collects antique shoes from the 90s. So, yeah, I know.
Like so platform not, shoes were out then, right?
Yeah. Right. They're talking about like Jordans, like original Jordans and whatnot. So Charles, you know, we got into this idea of the Supreme Court, and it really wrapped around the Colorado case and how that was,
yeah,
I mean, just an affront to constitutional logic and law that, you know, not found guilty of anything. No court of law tried a case, but we've decided that, you know, Donald Trump was part of an insurrection, and therefore, and it just flawed from its beginning. And I was actually relieved that it was the Supreme Court stood together on that and saying that, you know, that's not right. That's not what this country is for. But how do you think it impacts moving beyond Super Tuesday in the two-horse race that is Trump versus Biden?
Here, let me give you my general assessment of where the race is. First thing I would say, and see whether you two kind of agree with the way I'm looking at it, or whether you're wrong. I see it as being an overwhelmingly negative race. That is, I think that the main argument will be, don't vote for the other guy. He's dangerous.
Yeah.
I think that gives, I think that both candidates can actually make pretty strong arguments, at least to their base, that is true. The problem that Biden faces, first of all, it's harder. It's easier to run as the non-president, the non-incumbent, to right. say things are bad. And I think Trump's main affirmative argument will be the old Reagan argument against Jimmy Carter, which is, are you better off now? And I think there are not many people who would say that they're better off now than they were 4 years ago. But I think that the problem Biden has, in addition to the sort of a taint of corruption and in particular the prospect of Kamala Harris taking over as president during a second term, which is something that voters really don't want. But I think he also has this problem. To shore up his base, he has to move to the left. But that is precisely the wrong thing to do if he wants to win the middle.
Right.
Trump, I think Trump's problem really is not his policies, although they'll go after him on abortion, which is a big winner for Democrats, but with the electorate. Mm-hmm. But virtually all the Democratic advantage comes from female voters.
Yes.
I think that the Trump disadvantage really comes from people who don't like him personally and think he's dangerous because he sort of goes out of control. I think the best thing he can do is kind of what Biden did in the last race and will yes. surely do in this race, which is run from the basement, mm-hmm. say as little as possible that will irritate people. I mean, there's no reason to go after Nikki Haley after she lost.
Nikki Haley has that sort of nattering quality that I would, if I were her husband, I would have joined up again to another tour. But that's just because I know who supports her. You know, she's supported by the Never Trumpers and by the Jonah Goldbergs of the world and that sort of mm-hmm. thing. And I disagree with them, but I do see that Trump for the past, I don't know, I'd say several months now, has tried to do, he's dealing with the issue that is the most damaging for him,
which is
his temperament. I don't think I've written this and we've discussed it, that he doesn't have the temperament for the job, but I do like his policies.
Well, I think that your viewpoint is actually widely shared. And the question is whether he has enough discipline to stick with that. And I think where he gets in trouble are these late night tweets.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he's a very entertaining, maybe to you or not to you, but entertaining to large crowds when he speaks before them, and then he sometimes sort of goes over the top.
Yeah, like lock her up and that sort of stuff. Yeah,
yeah,
right. It sounds rather boastful and rather not with the proper temperament.
I agree. But I do think that on the whole, what you're going to see is both sides saying the other guy is not just worse, but he's really dangerous.
Right.
And I do think it's a big advantage for the Republicans that Biden's ailments, physical ailments and cognitive diminution, which is just clear, mean that Kamala Harris is just standing in the wings, and they will run against her. Normally, vice presidents don't make any difference at all. Last time any made a difference was when Lyndon Johnson helped win Texas, and that may not have been legitimate. But, I mean, really, they may have stolen it there from Nixon. But the fact is, Kamala Harris is not well-liked, and she's had many chances to come back, and she's never really done it successfully.
What I'm hoping for, and this is my little hope of hopes, is that the person that I said, put her on the ticket and I will become a Democrat, Nikki Haley, but she has to be the one, and Trump has to deal with her and bring her aboard for political reasons, I you know, not personal, and just deal with it.
I don't think he will do that. I mean, I think he'll try to bring her aboard, but I don't think he'll put her on the ticket. I think that there are three candidates, and I'll tell you which one I think he'll pick. The three candidates, everybody mentions Tim Scott. Yeah. But Tim Scott wouldn't help with the black vote, but he might help with the Winnetka vote of people who think Trump is racist and... You know,
right, that's the white guilt vote for those
the white guilt vote.
The white guilt
are not in Chicago,
right? And but I and there's a possibility that Elise Stefanik, who took down the Ivy League presidents, could be. I think the person he'll pick is Kristi Noem.
Now, see, what does she bring? Okay, she's rather attractive lady.
Well, that's a huge asset for Trump.
But I wouldn't want to. I mean, come on. I don't need eye candy in the office. I don't want that. That's kind of that's worse
that's,
than
that's how he thinks.
She served four terms. As
I know, I stand corrected, because for those of there are many women out there who will say, John Cass, don't be a sexist. You know, I don't want her chosen for her gender.
That's right.
So I won't want the vice president, the next president, because he's old too, right?
Yeah. Right. And but I think it's in his case, I think the other issue is not only his age, but remember, he's a lame duck the first day he's in office.
Right.
So I think he's going to want some sense, which I don't think you get with either Nikki Haley or Tim Scott. You just don't know. Scott's been all over the map, right?
Right.
You know, he's eating chitlins, he's eating bagels, he's eating pizza.
He's rather soft too. I mean, I don't see it. If you want to get a black conservative that would support Trump, that I think as a guy who has the testicular fortitude, pardon my French, to do the job, that would be Byron Donald of Florida.
Yeah, it's just so hard to nominate a not only somebody from the House, but somebody with no executive experience. In fact, let me take up that last point for a moment.
Okay.
I think that the deep state, or whatever you want to call it, the permanent government, will still be out to get Trump.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be really important that he have somebody, I would say either Mike Pompeo or John Ratcliffe, who has experience in dealing with the bureaucracies and reining them in as his chief of staff. Not as his vice president, but a chief of staff.
I think that would be a great idea. What about DeSantis as a vice president?
Well, there's a problem there unless one unless Trump were to take up residence in a different state. The Constitution prevents the electors from voting for two people from the same state. So that would be a problem. And I think DeSantis would have been a good candidate. And I thought he ran a shockingly bad campaign.
Yeah.
But I thought he would have
been. From the tip of his hair to the bottom of his shoes, he certainly did.
What would you make, Jeff?
What would you make of a Sarah Huckabee Sanders as a VP pick?
See, I think that I wouldn't rule her out. I think what you're going to see from Trump is mentioning a lot of names, and those constitute kind of a hat tip to people.
Right,
but
I
really think that, you know, being governor of Arkansas, she doesn't have much of a national profile. And but by the same token, you know, I couldn't rule her out. Who knows what Trump will do?
Sure.
I mean, that's actually one of his strengths in a certain way, especially in foreign policy, that he's just
there's
a certain erratic quality about him that makes foreign countries cautious.
He's a maverick.
They don't like the unpredictability of it.
That's correct. Yeah. That's right.
I mean, look at you. You know how predictable Biden will be because all you got to do is look at the people he's had lunch with when he was vice president, Xi Jinping, and so forth. And they're clinking glasses and raising.
Well, he's just very cautious. On Ukraine, and by the way, my views are pretty different from a lot of the people in the Republican Party. I really think that we not only should be supporting Ukraine, I think if we fail to do that, we'll end up paying more in the future to hold off Russia. That's not to say that I think that the Europeans are paying their fair share. I don't think a lot of them are. But I really feel like in Biden's case, it's very clear to me that his policy was all about not losing, not winning, but not losing. And
Ukraine, yes,
in Ukraine, and I think that's not the right way to fight that war. And I can understand how they're concerned about escalation. I really can. But by the same token, I just think they made a mistake in the way that they handled it.
I think it was smart for him in the sense that it's helped buoy the economy because all these parts and things are being manufactured here in jurisdictions that people need work that otherwise wouldn't be. And I think that's kind of the unsung hero of what he's done, that he's hasn't really tapped. And I think it's really, because we could be looking at the economy is doing okay, inflation's kind of down, wages have gone up a little, unemployment's down. But really, where's the, everyone's saying, well, where's this coming from? Well, you have the tech companies laying off tons of people, you have automobile makers completely changing direction from EV and saying, well, that was kind of a failed experiment, that we're not ready for that yet. And so what's been holding the economy up? Honestly, I think it's Ukraine, because where else are we spending billions of dollars a day that helps us directly and someone else is essentially buying? I don't know.
That's a very interesting point. Let me just add one thing to it, which is what we're really giving to Ukraine are old weapons. The weapons we're buying, what you're talking about, rightly, are new weapons, and we're putting those in our stockpile.
Right.
We're not giving them to Ukraine. So it's kind of a win-win. And the point about EVs is really interesting. The old line is the dogs just aren't eating the dog food. and the idea that you have union leaders coming out and supporting Biden, auto union leaders supporting Biden, is just nuts.
Especially since their men are going to be out of work because no one wants those electric cars.
Exactly.
Not in the Midwest, at least.
Yeah. I mean, they're not helping their members, which is their first sort of duty. They may be helping themselves as sort of leaders of the union. They get meetings in the White House and so
forth. Blah, blah, blah. That's
Right. Well, I mean, look, there are powerful unions that are trying to help their members, even if that hurts the public. And the clearest example is in Chicago, the teachers union.
I mean, what has gone on in the city of Chicago where we have this kind of these kind of people who are fighting it out over crumbs that are basically being burned to cinders in the political frying pan? I mean, my God.
Hey, I'm with you. In fact, I find maybe it's just the way I approach things, but I try to start off by thinking, well, how do people on the other side see it? And I just find it, and I think the thing that's so bizarre to me is that this let crime happen, it's kind of some combination of reparations and we feel guilty and so forth. But it's also the fact that the prison system, I think they rightly think, anybody who calls it a correction system is wrong. Really, all it does is take people off the streets. That's good. If the convictions are legitimate.
Rather radical of you to say that, because the alternative is what the Democratic Party has been practicing for the last several years. Don't put anyone in prison. Let the offenders, you know, the barbaric offenders attack more and more black women, because that's who they attack. They're not coming at me in St. John, Indiana, where everyone's got a gun. They're not coming out here. They're not going to Highland Park.
As soon as they go to Highland Park and Winnetka, you know, those suburbs will flip. But the fact is, I think that the Democratic Party is really heavily dependent upon black female vote. It's why they can't get rid of Kamala Harris. There would be just a meltdown over that. But it's also why their policies on what they call criminal justice, or whatever you want to call it, can't really change until they get a change of heart by that constituency. If that constituency decides that they want to just stick with current policies, it's really hard, because even though middle class people of all races are really fed up with it, and the cities, not just Chicago, but New York and San Francisco and a lot of other cities are losing their tax base because people are afraid to go downtown. If people are afraid to go downtown, how are they going to get income from store sales? They'll only get it from Amazon.
Exactly. But it's short-sighted, but you know, that's why so many people have left Chicago, Charles.
Exactly.
I'm going to be, you know, in the next few days, I'll be going down to speak to expatriates in Naples, where a lot of Chicago folk are going. I guess the one thing I see when I see them, I'll just have to say, "How you doing?"
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing? Because I don't know why would they want to be interested in Chicago, but they live in this beautiful paradise. I guess it's kind of like when you're on vacation, you like to look back and see how cold it is in Chicago, right? And maybe they want to know, where's Lady Macbeth and Lady McGates and so forth and so on?
Well, you know, the Germans have the best word for it, which is Schadenfreude.
Well, speaking of which, okay, because I'm thinking of the Schadenfreude I've had, in going through Hieronymus Bosch, paintings, looking through the art garden of earthly delights and thinking about two people that you know well and you're writing about.
Yeah.
And those two people are Fanny Willis and Mr. Humper. And I hear you're going to be writing a piece about that any day now.
Yeah, I have a piece that should be out very soon that is a complete rundown of all the corruption that happened there. But what you have is the district attorney for part of the Atlanta area, Fulton County.
Yeah.
And she began a relationship. We now have a lot of information. She began a relationship with a boyfriend named Nathan Wade in 2019. She then became, but she kept it secret. And she then became the district attorney, and she hired Nathan Wade at a very high rate. And
$600,000, my friend.
Over $650,000 so far. And she said that she expects the total bill to be between $3 and $4 million by the time the cases end. Well, I think she's going to find that the cases end for her a lot sooner.
Did it come up that at all that she also that he met with the Biden Justice Department in Washington to sort of coordinate this lawfare that you've so expertly written about in other columns?
Well, that's an interesting question, but it's not been sufficiently fleshed out so far. There were meetings at the White House, and we know that there were meetings there. And the reason we know that there were meetings there is that Nathan Wade seems to have billed the county DA's office for everything. He just billed them for everything. And because he billed them for everything, we know that he spent 8 hours meeting with the Obama White House. But we don't know whether there was coordination. This should never have happened. Huh. And there was a hearing that Fannie Willis has done. She filed a RICO case, normally filed against organized crime. She filed that against Trump and I think 17 other defendants, I think 18 in all. Right. And then that nothing is more complex than a RICO case.
Especially and when they don't have anything to do with one.
They didn't even know each other. And, but that didn't stop them. And it didn't stop her from hiring a guy who mostly handled traffic tickets. And, they did hire RICO specialist as an outsider. They haven't used him for very many hours. They've only used, Nathan Wade because they're funneling money to him. And then it turns out, of course, that he's gone on all these vacations with Fannie Willis. Those are illegal, of course. I mean, it's not illegal to go on a vacation necessarily, but if you with one of the employees, but it raises lots of questions, and you have to declare all the income or benefits that you received, and she didn't do that. She says she's done all of – she repaid everything in cash. Well, Jesus. I mean, give me a break.
Wait,
this is over $7,000.
Wait, it's a black thing, okay? Don't you know that? That's what they're saying.
Well, that's an interesting point, too, because every time you say anything, it's racist.
Right.
And but that's also a problem in the following sense. She went to a black church.
Right.
And said basically, if you they only criticized her and Nathan Wade because they were black. Right. And by the way, if you were against them, you were against God.
Right.
But
I love that part. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's not going to wash very well because it pollutes the jury pool in where she's going to try the case. So I mean, I just think that the judge, whose name is McAfee, Scott McAfee, will not only rule him off the case, I think there's going to be criminal referrals here. He may not do it, but there's a Senate hearing by the Georgia State Senate that was very responsibly run. I was impressed with how they handle it, and I think that they will make criminal referrals for sure.
Well, it's because the tax, she should be charged with, I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I don't mean to
play one on TV, huh?
Yeah. But I mean, she took money from the taxpayers to pay for sex. Didn't she not? Madam,
well,
we've established
how
what
else
you
is
are.
She got, yeah. I,
who said that? George Bernard Shaw or Churchill? I don't know.
Yeah. Mark Twain. So I think that she could be charged with perjury, filing false documents with a court, misuse of public money, witness tampering. I want to come back to that, and obstruction of justice, and violating her oath of office by taking outside compensation. Not only could those lead to felony indictments, they could lead to the loss of law licenses. And the obstruction, witness tampering, obstruction of justice, is that the DA, or actually assistant DA for another county, was in her office and heard her threaten a witness to tell the witness, you don't have to talk about any of this to the people who are, quote, coming after us. Well, who's coming after us? Well, that's people who are alleging that this was an unfair prosecution. So that's witness tampering, and you can't do that. I just think that she's in a whole passel of trouble. The Georgia legislature could also change the pardon law. I mean, it's a state law, so it can be changed and so forth. But I think that when you have a situation, not just that one or the ones that have been filed in New York State, but I think that these Jack Smith cases where they want to go to trial in the months immediately preceding the election, having waited 3 years to bring the charges, that's just outrageous to me. I mean, it would be outrageous with whichever party it happened. It's
Democrat
not
or
fair.
Republican. Yeah.
It's not fair. He deserves to be on the campaign trail if he wishes to be. And it wasn't fair when they attacked Hillary Clinton. But Merrick Garland, who has been just an enormous disappointment as Attorney General, he should say that none of these cases they should have been brought last year, and if they weren't brought last year, they can be brought in mid-November. We have there may be a reason to bring them to trial, but there's not a reason. The public's interest in non-interference in the election is much greater than the public's interest in having the trial in August as opposed to November. They would say, well, we deserve to know whether Trump committed these offenses, perhaps, but we don't, in which case you should have brought it a year ago and stopped screwing around like this.
Well, now then you open up another can of worms because you bring up Merrick Garland, who I'm so happy. It's the only thing that Mitch McConnell did that I liked about him, and stop him from becoming Supreme Court justice. When I see that Merrick Garland's remarks with respect to
voting
fraud, like it's like all of a sudden now, if you have I want clean elections, I'm the racist, Mr. Attorney General. Have you no decency, sir? You know, is that where the response should be?
I wonder how many people really remember the lawyer named Welch who said that against Joe McCarthy.
Exactly. Well,
but it is true. But I mean, it's just they've played the identity politics thing for so long. I think that they don't even realize how it looks to everybody else. Everybody has a voter ID. Everybody has an ID now. This may have been an issue some years ago, but I think the real problem it has to do with illegal aliens. I want to say something about that.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to say that there's nothing wrong with the word illegal aliens. It's used in our laws about them. And secondly, when Joe Biden mispronounced the name, I was willing to say, okay, we all mispronounce the occasional name. He mispronounced Lincoln Riley's name. He called her Lincoln Riley. But to then apologize for using the term illegal, but not apologize for saying the poor woman who was killed by illegal, he got her name wrong. I just find that that's just the worst kind of pandering.
Well, that's where we are now in this country of ours. And
yeah, we should put the panders in the zoo.
Speaking of Biden blunders, John, you sent me something before we got started here.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be a good way to kind of close things out.
Because I'm editing our friend Steve Huntley's column right now that will be appearing in JohnCastNews.com this week. And he's furious about Hamas, the treatment of Israel and in the media and the politics of it and the pro Hamas wing. He stands up for Israel. Okay. So I support people with different points of view, and his is one that I do support. But there's a recent clip where Joe Biden is interviewed about what's going on in Israel and Gaza, and starts to talk about Hamas and then changes subjects in the middle of the interview.
Yeah, here's a clip of it. He was on MSNBC. Here, listen to this.
Who actually wants a deal? Do you think Hamas actually wants a ceasefire?
Well, I think Hamas would like a total ceasefire across the board, because they would see they have a better chance to survive and maybe rebuild. But that's not what I think the vast majority of people think. You have to look. After what happened in World War II and the carpet bombing that took place, what happened was we ended up in a situation where we changed the rules of the game, what constitutes legitimate rules of war.
I
don't think that's a misstatement. I really don't. I mean, I do think that we have different rules of war. But let me explain why the Israelis are so determined to go into this city of Rafah.
Right.
Rafah is on the border with Egypt. Mm-hmm. Egypt would actually like them to go in. They just can't say it. Hamas is a branch of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, which is a rival to the regime there. But there are tunnels that are... there are tunnels that go from Rafah into Egyptian territory, the Sinai, and those are very weakly policed. They were for a few years after El-Sisi came in, but they're not now. If those are not closed off, then Hamas, some of their leaders can escape, but even more important, they can bring in new weapons from Iran. And if they can bring in new weapons, not only can they use those to attack Israel, obviously, but they can use them to intimidate anybody else who would try to govern Gaza. So remember, the reason Hamas is there, in part, is a U.S. mistake. And it was because the Palestinian Authority was very corrupt, and everybody knew it. But the U.S. under Condi Rice demanded that there be an election. And people said, no, don't do this, because Hamas will be elected, not necessarily because people are in favor of this radical Islamist group, but because the Palestinian Authority is so corrupt. But she demanded they go ahead with it, and they did, and it was a disaster as predicted. And So I would say that Bibi Netanyahu, who probably won't survive the end of the war, is right. going to make sure that Israel is secure from the rearmament of Hamas, and he can't do that without going into Rafah. And as for bringing in food, we all want to see the poor people who are just civilians, we want to see them fed. But by bringing in these meals ready to eat, where those are going is into underground tunnels for the remaining fighters. Hamas fighters,
yeah,
because they can stay fresh forever. And so there are real problems, and I don't have any confidence whatsoever in the people who are the alleged foreign policy experts in the Biden administration. I don't think they know their S from Shinola.
They're trying to undercut Netanyahu.
Well, of course,
at a time when yes, they're bad situations, there's bad alternatives, but you can't expect the Israelis,
yeah,
after all they've gone through, to turn, become like lambs and turn their necks. I would not do that if they don't, to approach the slaughterhouse and offer up their necks for slaughter is not something that I would do. I would not expect my friends or family to do, and not or my people, which is American yeah. people, and yeah. I don't expect the Israelis to do it either.
I think you got it exactly right, and I think that's what will happen. When Biden spoke of a come to Jesus moment with Netanyahu,
right.
I thought, I wonder if he would say that about any of the Muslim countries. That was the first thing I thought was, would he use a phrase like that with a Muslim country? And the answer, of course, is no, because for him, the two-state solution is Minnesota and Michigan.
Perfect, Charles. Perfect, because that's all he cares about is getting through the election. But we care about having Charles Lipson back on the Chicago Way. So, Charles, someday we'll talk about our favorite movies and where how the Irish saved civilization. But right now, I just want to bid you farewell for a bit. And thank you for being here.
What a pleasure. And what a pleasure, Jeff. It's always fun to talk with you guys. It couldn't be more comfortable and more interesting.
Thank you, Charles.
Cheers.
See you around, buddy. For Charles Lipson, Professor Emeritus, University of Chicago, of the Ritzma Chair, prolific writer, you can find all his stuff, or a lot of it, at charleslipson.com. Go right there and you'll see his latest columns, including, I hope, the one that he wrote about Fannie Willis and Mr. Humper. I can't wait to read that one. And for Jeff Carlin, Executive Producer at WGN Radio, future physics teacher, my friend, and good man, and also good husband to Christine. And for me, I'm John Cass, husband, Greek Orthodox, Christian, father, editor-in-chief of johncassnews.com. Join us for another cup of Midwestern common sense at the Chicago Way Podcast on WGN+.